In those days, there was no king in Israel. We all did as we saw fit. We lived in the promised land. I mean, God had given us that location. It was beautiful as far as the eye could see. I don't know if you're familiar with our story of the Israelites, but Moses took us out of captivity, out of Egypt. He brought us to the edge of the promised land. He was never allowed to enter on his own, but his aide, the young man that God had raised up next to him, Joshua, he brought our people into the promised land. And it was amazing. But when Joshua passed away, things changed. We forgot about the Lord. We began adapting the worship practices of the Canaanites and the other people around us. We failed to completely drive them out of the land. We disobeyed the Ten Commandments. We ignored them. We went in this cycle. It was like this continual pattern where our people would sin. We would forget about the Lord. And then it was like God would send nations against us. It was like he had handed us over to them. And they would come and just brutalize us. They would attack us. They would oppress us. It was horrible. Nothing changed until we repented. Till we got on our knees and cried out to the Lord to save us. And then at that time, he would raise up a deliverer. He would raise up someone who would lead our people and get us back in line with the Lord. This happened time and time again with Othniel, Ehud, and Deborah. Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I forgot to introduce myself to you. I'm from the tribe of Manasseh. I'm from a very small clan. It's the Abiezerites. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it. If you're not, it's okay. My father's name is Joash, and my name is Gideon. Some people called me Jerubbaal, but we can kind of get to that later. In Manasseh, in our land, it is a beautiful place. If you've never visited, you really should. The hills are rolling. There's dew that settles on the ground each morning. We don't really even have to water our crops because the Lord does it for us. Our tribe is fragmented, that's true. The Jordan River cuts down the middle. I live on the western side with my clan, while the other half of us, they've stayed on the eastern side. They chose not to enter into the promised land, but they decided to keep their herds and flocks over on that side. They still helped us conquer, but half of our tribe remained over there. Our land, though, is awesome. Our tribe is kind of in the middle, and my clan, though, is very small. See, when you know some of these things about who I am and where I live, it'll make sense to you when I tell you that the Midianites, they just kept coming to oppress us. It was horrible. Year after year after year, they would oppress my people. At first, they had a couple of them. But then when they knew what we had and how good our land was, they just kept coming. They would steal our grain. They would take our sheep. They would slaughter our cattle. Our kids were so scared to come out of their tents, they didn't even want to play outside. Could you imagine living like that? Where people stole your food. They took everything that you had. There was nothing you could do. They rode in on camels like plagues of locust. I don't know if you know what a camel is. I didn't see any outside here. They're a large beast, capable of traveling a great distance, much more than a man or woman can just on their own two human feet. They could go much faster than any of the animals that we had, some of the small donkeys, but they would take those too. Our people were so oppressed that some of my friends actually fled to the hills and the mountains, where they would go live in caves and clefts. That's where they made their home. I was scared. Every time they came, I was scared. One day I was threshing grain in a wine press. If you know anything about agriculture, you know you don't thresh grain in a wine press. You press wine in a wine press. See, to thresh grain, really, I should be out in the open field. I should be tossing the grain into the air and allowing the wind to sweep the chaff away while the heavy kernels of grain fall down. and I can enjoy the food. But I was so scared because the Midianites, they would sit on top of our hills and they would watch when we began threshing the grain, and they would just come down and steal it. They would take everything we had from us. So I was hiding in a wine press. And as I was busy about my work, lost in my thoughts, I heard a noise. I looked up and it startled me a little. It was a man, but there was something different about this man. The way he looked was different. And then he spoke and he said this to me. He said, "The Lord is with you, mighty warrior." I bit my tongue, because if I would have said what I really wanted to say, it would have been inappropriate. See, how is the Lord with me? And how am I a mighty warrior if I'm threshing grain in a wine press? Is that what a mighty warrior does? No, I was scared. And I was hiding. So I responded to him, "If the Lord is with me, how come I am acting like this? And how come my people live like this? And if God really delivered us to this beautiful land, why is this going on?" "No, no, no, sir. The Lord has abandoned my people. He doesn't care about us." The angel, I think that's what he was. There's no other way to describe him. He responded to me and he said, "I will use you to save Israel from the Midianites." And I thought, wow. You've called me mighty warrior. You've told me you're going to use me. I had to look over my shoulder. Was he talking to somebody else? No, he was talking to me. And I asked him, "Do you know that I am from Manasseh? That my tribe is not that big? Do you know I am from the clan of the Abizarites? We're so small. And in my father's home, sir, I am the least." And he said, "I know. But I will use you, Gideon, and the Lord will bring about a great victory to save Israel." I said, "Sir, if this is true," at this point in the conversation, I am convinced this guy is an angel because of what he said, how he looked, and how he communicated to me. And I said, "Would you please wait here and allow me to prepare a meal to bring it back to you?" And so I ran. I didn't even wait for his answer. I ran home. I prepared a meal fit for an angel. And I brought it back. And as I was walking back to him, the thought crossed my mind. Maybe you can't be too small for God to use you. As I placed the meal in front of him, he asked me to specifically place it on a rock where he was. I stood back and began to gander at his presence and take in the surroundings. And he took his staff. And he struck the rock where the meal was, and immediately it was consumed with fire, and he disappeared. I didn't know what to do. I fell face down. I cried out, "I have seen the Lord. Alas, I will die." But the voice of the Lord spoke to me, "You will not die." I was so nervous. I was so scared. I was just a small little guy. How could anybody use me? That night I was at home in my tent, laying in bed, pondering what had happened that day. I was having a difficult time sleeping when the voice of the Lord spoke to me. And he said, "Gideon, I want you to go and destroy the idols that your father has." Oh, man. I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you that we worshiped idols. Don't get me wrong, we worshiped the Lord, but the Lord had abandoned us. And when we couldn't see God at work, we went after the idols that we could see, to Baal, to Asherah, and we brought our worship to them. We worshiped the Lord too, but we worshiped them more. When the Lord asked me to do that, I wasn't sure how to respond except in obedience. See, this time it would require action on my behalf. I lay in bed, wondering how to do it. How to fulfill the request that the Lord had asked of me. In the middle of the night, I went and I got 10 of my servants. I said, "Men, come with me now." And we went into our front yard and we cut these poles down. We cut them into pieces. We smashed them up. We destroyed them completely. There's no remnant of them left. After the couple hours of work, I went back into my bed and I lay there, hands shaking a little, tossing and turning. Not sure if you've ever experienced that, where you lay in bed and you just can't fall asleep. I was so scared. What would my clan do in the morning? What will my father say? How will the people around me respond to what I just did? My thoughts kept racing. I never fell back asleep. The light slowly started shining underneath our tent. I could see it getting brighter outside. I decided to just kind of lay down and stay there. I heard people milling around, and as the minutes progressed into hours, I knew they were mad. See, they had come to worship those idols that morning, to lay their sacrifices there. But those idols were gone. And they took up an investigation. And the more and more that they processed the information that they found, all the evidence pointed back to me. It was my fault. As I was laying in my bed, the people came to our tent. My father stood there and he said, "What do you want?" And they said, "We believe it was your son who tore down our idols." And my father said, "Are you here to plead the case of Baal? If Baal is God, let him plead his own case. As for you, any of you who fights for Baal will be dead by the morning." I was so thankful. My dad had stood up for me. He stood up for me when I needed it so badly. And I started thinking, maybe I wasn't too small for God to use me. As the people left, I could hear them cursing me and saying horrible things. One person said, "Let's just call him Jerubbaal." Now, in your language, you don't understand that. But for us, it means one who contends with Baal, or let Baal contend with him. Not sure what kind of nickname that is. I'll let you interpret that on your own. But I knew God had used me. The next morning, when I woke up, I looked and I saw in the valley of Jezreel, the Midianites. It was the most of them that had ever been there before. They were as thick as locusts. They were like a plague coming on my people. They were here to steal everything we had. We would have to keep our children inside so they didn't harm them also. I was so discouraged. I was so disheartened. What would become of this? I'm not exactly sure how to explain what happened next. I've been told, as I've communicated with my friends about this, none of them understand it. But the Spirit of the Lord came upon me in might and power. I felt this confidence I had never felt before in my life. I went into my tent and I grabbed a horn. It didn't look exactly like this, but hopefully this will give you an example. And I took that horn and I blew it as loud as I could. And when I did, the people of my clan, they came to me. See, they had heard how the angel had come and met with me and what he had said. They started gathering around me. They believed that God would use me to save Israel. They believed it so much, they sent messengers to Naphtali, Zebulun, the rest of Manasseh, and all the way to Asher. It was almost like I didn't even have time to go back into my tent to put my horn down. When I looked around me, and an army of men had assembled, 32,000 men came together. Men who were sick of their food being stolen. Men who were sick of their grain being stolen. Men who were sick of living under the oppression of these foreigners. Wow. There was a lot of them. Now, I know God had spoken to me, that he said he would use me to save Israel. But the more and more they came, as the day wore on, I was starting to question it. that night before I went to bed. I grabbed a sheep's fleece. I took it to the floor in the threshing room, and I laid it down. I looked up to the Lord, and I said, "Oh, sovereign Lord, if you will use me to save Israel, in the morning when I wake up, will you make this fleece wet with dew? But will you make everywhere around it dry?" I went to bed. I fell asleep. It was not the best night of sleep I had ever had. I woke up promptly when the sun arose, and I went to find that fleece. And as I looked at it, the dew of Manasseh was resting upon it, but it was nowhere to be found around it. I took a deep breath as I knelt down, and I grabbed it. Not only was it wet with dew, but as I started wringing it, I realized that it was drenched with dew. And I squeezed out a bowl full of water from that sheep's fleece. Before I went to bed that night, I prayed a similar prayer. I took that sheep's fleece. I laid it on the floor of the threshing room once again. And I said, "God, please do not be angry with me. Please do not be disappointed. But if you will use me to save Israel, will you make this fleece dry? And will you place dew all around it?" I walked away and I went to bed. When I woke up that morning and I found that fleece, it was exactly as I had prayed. It was wet everywhere around it, but that fleece was dry. I went back into my tent, knowing that the 32,000 men had come together. I started thinking about what I would say to them. If you're a military leader, I guess you're supposed to have a good speech, I thought. So I started kind of pacing in my tent, practicing what I would say. "Men, thank you for gathering today. As you know, the wise men have said there's about 135,000 Midianites down in that valley, and that God will use me to save Israel. I know many of you have not gone into battle before. So all I'm asking you to do is that each man would kill 4 people." Every time I said it, it didn't flow out right. I'm not even sure I had the confidence to kill 4 men. As I tried to regain my thoughts and regroup, the Lord spoke to me. It was a welcomed voice. He said, "Gideon." "Yes, Lord." "You have too many men for me to save Israel through you." "Did you say too many, God?" "Yes, Gideon. I just wanted to make sure." "What shall I do?" And God told me, he said, "I want you to assemble the men, and I want you to tell them that anyone who is fearful is released to go home. They do not have to stay in the battle. There will be no shame, and no one will look down upon them for their actions. They can leave and go back to their families and to their homes." "Yes, Lord." So I went out. I found a place where I could gather the men. And as they came around me, I said, "Men, as you know, there are 135,000 Midianites camped in the valley, and they have been oppressing us. But some of you are fearful. And the Lord has told me that if you are fearful, you are released right now to go back to your home." At this point, I thought maybe 10 or 20 guys would leave. I mean, there were a lot of smiling faces out there. They were ready to put the hurt on these guys. It wasn't tens that left. It wasn't hundreds. It wasn't thousands, but it was tens of thousands. And after I said it, there was this sigh of relief, like they could finally leave. They didn't wait for any other instructions. No, they quickly got to work. They packed their tents. They grabbed their belongings. And at that moment, 22,000 men left. They walked away. And I saw their dust trail as they headed off into the distance. I went back into my tent. I started practicing my speech again. Men, you know there's 135,000 Midianites down there. There's 10,000 of us. I just need each and every one of you to kill 13 men. Maybe some of you 14. And the Lord interrupted me. He said, Gideon. I said, yes, Lord. Your army is too big. Are you sure? Yes, Gideon, I am sure. Gideon, I want you to take the men to go get a drink. And while they're drinking, I will communicate with you on how to send some of the men home. Yes, Lord. So we went down to the water's edge. And I watched the men drink. Some of the men, they came down and they got on their hands and knees and they lapped up water like a dog. And some of the men, they got down and they cupped the water and brought it to their mouth. Now, as I was watching this, God began speaking to me and he said, Gideon, the men who get down on their hands and knees and lap water like a dog, I want you to release them to go home. But those men who cup the water and bring it to their mouth, I want them to stay with you. I said, God, are you sure it's not the other way around? I was watching what they were doing. And as the ripples went, I saw how many men lapped the water like a dog. And so after everyone had their drink, I assembled the men one more time. And I said, men, as you drank, some of you got down on your hands and knees and you lapped water like a dog. At this point, I would like to release you to go back to your home. And those men who stayed and you cupped the water with your hands, you will stay with me. But those of you who are leaving, please leave your supplies for us. As they walked away, 9,700 men left our presence that afternoon. A guy, I don't remember his name, passed me. And he said, you sure do know how to thin an army. And he looked back and he said, you have less than 1% of your original group of men. Less than 1%. We went from 32,000 to 300 in one day. But you know what I realized? I started thinking, maybe you can't be too small for God to use you. But maybe you could be too big. I addressed the men who were remaining and I said, men, we've had a long day and tomorrow we will go into battle and the Lord will use us to save Israel. I want each of you to get a good night's rest. I'll see you in the morning. And as I went into my tent, I laid down and I began processing the events of that day. And what I realized is that the men who were left with me were not scared and were alert. These were the kind of men that I wanted to go into battle with. And I started thinking about how God was going to use this small number to save Israel. And I drifted off to sleep. In the middle of the night, the Lord woke me up and he said, Gideon, if you're still not convinced that I will use you to save Israel, I want you to go into the camp of the Midianites right now. Go to the edge. Okay. So I grabbed my servant, Purah, and I said, come with me, let's go. Let's go to the edge while the Midianites are sleeping. We thought they would all be asleep, but we were wrong. There were two men awake. And as we snuck up to the edge of the camp, my heart was racing. My palms were sweaty. I had to look down at my heart and say, shh, you need to be quiet. They will hear you. Shh. And we snuck up to the edge. And at that point, there were two men having a conversation while most of the other men slept. I had never been that close to a Midianite. My senses were heightened. I was scared. I was nervous. Thoughts were racing through my mind. I can't remember exactly what the one man said to the other, but I'd like to give you the gist of it. This man said, friend, I had a dream and I woke in troubled. A barley loaf was rolling down the hill into our camp and it smashed our camp. And his friend said, oh, no, That can only be Gideon, the son of Joash. It means that God is going to use him to save Israel, and we will be completely destroyed. I had no way of understanding to respond to this. And so I fell on my face, and I worshiped the Lord. God, everything you said is true. When you came to me, when you used me to smash the idols, you answered my prayer in the fleece, and now you have thinned our army, and it will be you. Purah and I quietly snuck out of their camp in the cover of night. We got back the 4-mile hike back to where we were camping at the springs of Herod, and after catching our breath, we woke the men. Men, wake up, wake up. The Lord is going to use us to save Israel. And so what I did is I told those men, you must listen clearly to me. Rub your eyes. Wake up. Get ready. Here is what we're going to do. I broke them into 3 groups of 100. And I said, you need to go, and I need each of you to grab a horn and a jar. Grab your torch and follow my lead. Do exactly as I do. I reiterated to them as we left the camp, men, do exactly as I do. And we went down into the valley where the Midianites were camped. We surrounded this horrible, oppressive group of people in our 3 different groups. I took my horn. I blew it as loud as I could. I took the jar in my hand. I smashed it on the ground. And then I shouted, for the Lord and for Gideon. And each of the 300 men did exactly as I did. They blew their horn. They smashed their jar. And they shouted at the top of their voice, for the Lord and for Gideon. What happened next was unlike anything I had ever seen in my life. And I hope you never experience something like this. The Midianites fled out of their tent, woken from their sleep, sword in hand, and they began slashing each other, cutting each other to bits, falling their own men left and right. As we stood on the edge of the camp, I was in horror at the screams, at the bloodshed, and the murder that was taking place in front of me. Some of the men escaped, and we chased them down. We killed another 15,000 of them. We called some of Israel to help us. And all of those men, the Midianites who came to oppress us, were dead. And after we killed them, we went to their dead and we stripped them. We looted everything that they had, their fine clothing, their jewelry, their earrings, their gold, their swords. I wanted to bring an example of one of the swords, but the men with the letters TSA would not allow me to this morning. I'm very sorry. That is a nice weaponry. And I looked at the loot that all the men had done. Wow. It was amazing to think of that. And after the battle, I went home. And I began to remember how the Lord had spoken to me, how he had answered my prayer with the fleece, and how he had dwindled that army and used 300 men to defeat 135,000. Wow. As I sat at my home, it didn't take but a couple days, and all of Israel came to approach me, and they said, Gideon, we want you to be our king. Rule over us, you and your sons and your grandsons. I didn't have to think for long, and I said, I will not be your king, but the Lord will rule over you. When I look back, I understand why they made that request. See, even though in my words I had communicated I don't want to be the king, in my actions, I had communicated something different. When God told me that we were going to defeat the Midianites, why did I have the men shout for the Lord and for Gideon? I should have just had them shout for the Lord. I didn't need to add my voice into it. When the men looted the dead, I asked them, will each of you please bring an earring and lay it at my feet, just one gold earring? And the men agreed. And they brought the gold, and they brought it, and they brought it, and they laid it at my feet. And next thing I knew, there was a mountain of gold, 43 pounds, which translates into $800,000 of your money. If I didn't want to be a king, why was I acting like that? What I'm about to share next with you is very embarrassing. I ask you to please not judge me for my actions. I took that gold and I fashioned it into an ephod. Now, I've been told that you don't understand what an ephod is, and what an ephod means is a covering. And I took that covering and I rebuilt the altar to Baal. And I rebuilt the Asherah pole. And I put that ephod on it. And all of the people in Israel, we began to worship those idols again. I'm embarrassed to admit that I was the first leader to officially sponsor idol worship in Israel. How did it come to that? As an old man, I was sitting around telling my story to people. And a young boy looked at me and he said, "Gideon, how come you do not worship the Lord anymore?" I wanted to strike that boy with the back of my hand, but I restrained myself. In my last years, that question was horrific to me. I couldn't answer it. And I began to ask myself, had I become too big for God to use me? Had I forgotten about the Lord and just gone back to my old ways? So you may wonder, why am I here this morning sharing my story with you? And I think there's two reasons. The first that I would like to say is, I imagine that some of you have become too big for God to use you. Now, you might say like, whoa, Gideon, that's mean. Don't you know times are different? Yes, I would agree with you. Times are different. But people, we're not that much different. I look around at you and people still look about the same. Now, I understand that you have more advancements in technology than my people ever had. That your ability to travel is greater than any of these camels ever could. That the knowledge and understanding you have of the sciences far exceeds anything my people had. You are a very smart people, and you have a lot. But unfortunately, you think with all of the advancements that you've made that you do not need the Lord. And it hurts my heart. And some of you have become too big for God to use you. And you need to be humbled. And you need to let go. Now, on the other hand, some of you think you are too small for God to use you. You think you could never be like one of these leaders that you see in your community. You think that you're not trained or that you don't have enough knowledge or understanding to be like some of the people that serve here at your church. You think because of your family history that God can't use you. All of those are untrue. God can use you, and God wants to use you, and God wants to work through you. See, the sad thing is that some of you don't know is you can never be too small for God to use you, but you can be too big.